You're listening to the Colorado Springs Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by RECO, your local guide for all things real estate investing in Colorado.
Hey, Colorado Springs, Chris Lopez and Jenny Bayless here today to talk about what's going on in the market. The last 2 months, we've seen inflation tick up. We've also seen interest rates tick up. So it's creating some change in the marketplace right now, which does two things. It creates a lot of questions and uncertainties in people's mind. But anytime there's also change, there's also opportunity. So in this podcast, we're going to talk about what we see going on, some market expectations, and also some opportunities that we're seeing in the marketplace now as well. Jenny, good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
I'm very excited to talk about this. I think we both have some passion on here as we've talked about it, debated it, and you know, talked around circles with various people at points. So to jump into it, I think the first thing is let's talk inflation. I mean, that's the biggest thing in the headline right now. And it's real. It was like 8%, 8.5% this last month or year over year. Like it climbed.
Yeah. So I know that's kind of been like the buzzword lately. And I mean, I still think that real estate is one of the best asset classes that can hedge you against inflation. Because it's one of those things that if the train is moving, like, well, let's just jump on the train and let it take us, as opposed to trying to do something to stop it, because it's not going to. Like it's bigger than any of us. So that's kind of how I see it. And I know we were talking about it earlier. The best way that I can wrap my head around just kind of moving with the motions of inflation is, you know, we'll get into the rising interest rate piece second, but, you know, we'll segment it out. So if you're going to use leverage and you're going to purchase a property borrowing 75 or 80% of the asset's value through your lender, so you're putting down 20, 25%. Well, if inflation is causing asset values to rise, then you as the real estate investor, assuming you use conventional lending, you get to keep 100% of that equity differential. So, you know, all things equal, if a property goes up $10,000 and you only put 25% down, you get to keep $10,000 in equity. You don't owe the bank $7,500 in equity from that. So that, to me, is probably one of the most powerful benefits of real estate, against inflation. Go ahead.
I would say I totally agree. And it just goes back to why, I mean, you know, we've been seeing the last 6 months, all the headlines and graphs of how much real estate is historically such a great hedge against inflation. What you talked about is exactly it. You're buying a leveraged asset, and if that asset price is inflating, you reap some big gains there.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. And then, you know, just kind of historically, as property values rise and as wages rise as a result of inflation, and so do rents. So that's kind of, you know, the fuel that keeps it going, I guess, is one way to look at it.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, we talk about, you know, interest rates going up, prices going up, but, you know, from an investor standpoint, rents are going up as well, which is mm-hmm. helps is what, you know, helps with understanding, hey, this market, we're seeing pretty significant growth in areas, but so is rent, because rents went up, what, 13, 15, 18% last year. And they'll probably be not quite as high, but I would expect to be double digit or close to it this year again. That helps too with that cash flow spread. And
exactly.
So something that I have played around with, and I encourage all of our clients now as they're starting to look at properties, I know you have too, is like play around with the rent assumptions and the price assumptions. Where a lot of us are using Joe Massey's spreadsheet to analyze properties. You know, it's great. It's simple. If you don't have it, go to the website, download it, the free toolkit. But as you plug in a property, a lot of times Jenny and I use 3%, 4% rent and price appreciation. Well, go in there, and if you've done a property last year, pull out that old spreadsheet and change the assumptions to 8% rent growth to 8% price appreciation. And then look at year two, look at year three. Go back and do it at a higher amount, a lower amount, but play around with those assumptions. While it makes the year 10, year 30 really, really wonky and give you a snapshot into like how year two, year three may look. Because we won't have this crazy growth forever, or hopefully we won't. But that's also one way to look at understanding, hey, if the market is going to keep going up in price and rents, was that due to my returns? So I play around with that and encourage everyone out there, spend a few minutes, do 3 and 3, 6 and 6, 9 and 9, 12 and 12, and see what it does for year two and year three.
Yeah. And like you just said, we encourage you to move beyond the cash flow tab of the workbook, since that's only year one. Look at the long-term analysis, you know, for the next 3 to 5 years. And I think that will shed some light as well.
Yeah. So obviously the market is going to do what the market does. We unfortunately can't do squat with interest rates, can't do squat with appreciation, inflation. The market, the Denver market, the interest rate market, the finance market does what it does. And with that, we have to figure out ways to adapt the market. We can change expectations, change strategies of investors, but we can't change the market. And so when you're talking with a client, Jenny, like, what are the common like things that you're telling people as far as like the new expectations? Like, hey, I know we're looking at this, but now here's the new reality. What are the kind of things that you're seeing and discussing out there?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting, and sometimes it's disappointing for people to hear what the reality is. But I also think that it's important that we give them a reality check up front, and that unfortunately, you know, even though we are investor friendly agents, we don't have a magic investment wand to be able to wave to find someone, you know, a special lender that can get them lower rates or a perfect property at a discount. But basically we just, you know, are here to take what the market is serving and figure out ways to make it work for an investor's individual situation. So a lot of the comments that we've been getting lately are people that aren't happy with the rising interest rates for 30-year conventional fixed loans. So, you know, in that case, we'll advise, hey, why don't you speak to a local lender like First Bank, something like that, and look for an ARM product that is more risky, but it typically allows you to lock into a lower interest option. So if you have the risk tolerance for that, that's something to explore.
Yeah. And to give to just highlight some numbers on them, because for, you know, we have not talked about ARM loans for the last couple of years because we have been spoiled with the amazing, you know, 30-year procs last couple of years, but that that train has left the station, not coming back. But ARM loans, so these are adjustable rate mortgages. And right now there's about, I'd say, 3/4 to 1 point spread I've seen just from like some ballpark numbers. So that might take you from say 5.5 to 4.5 interest rate. If you're like, oh, great. Well, that increases your cash flow. But I've heard, oh, I want something that's 30-year fixed. Well, it's, you know, there's some give and take there. That's part of the process and part of like the pros and cons of the two. So 30-year fixed right now, you're locked in for 30 years. We're seeing interest rates higher than ARM loan. ARM loan, we're seeing them lower, but you have a 5 or 7, maybe a 10-year fixed period of what the interest rate is. So it comes down to seeing those numbers and feeling what your risk tolerance is. Like, I'm personally, as an investor, open to using ARM commercial products, ARM products on the next rental property I buy if the interest rate is lower enough. Two reasons. One is because I expect in 5 to 7 years, I'll probably have sold it by then or repositioned it. It's kind of what my investing style is. So leaning towards a 7-year, I feel very comfortable with it. Secondly, I have a lot of debt locked in at 30-year low interest rates, like pretty much everything but one property is sub 4. So from like an overall portfolio, you know, Chris Lopez portfolio risk management, I've got some very low interest rates. I'll take some, I'll spice it up and add some risk to yourself and there are higher interest rates. But I'm perfectly good with those. Jenny, what about you?
Well, let me also say that you have cash reserves too.
Yes.
So that's the third pillar. But Yeah, I think I would be open to an ARM or two on maybe a lower cost asset. You know, maybe 200,000 to 300,000 if I'm looking in Pueblo or something. Just in case I needed to bail myself out in 5 to 7 years if, you know, rates are, you know, skyrocketing. I know that most ARMs, they have a stipulation where they can only raise the rates, you know, 1% a year till you get back to market rate. But the clock is ticking at that point. So I think, you know, it would be a controlled scenario, and because I feel comfortable with my overall portfolio as well.
Yeah, definitely read the fine print in there. And I used to be a lot more scared of, like, I'll say, oh my gosh, worst case scenario. And then I'm like, okay, in 10 years, if the property's worth this much, I've paid this much debt down, and interest rates are at 9%. Oh, the payment's that? Okay, I could actually still afford that. Like, it's not that, like, it's not completely doom and gloom. So definitely play with the numbers, understand the numbers, understand your risk tolerance, and then figure out where the two meet together. But that's a big part of the expectations of the market right now, is that these higher interest rates, they are here to stay. But there are different lending products out there that you can use to help change rates, terms, down payment percentages. And so we'll be talking a lot more about different products out there as the market's changing. And other things in the market is realize that this compressing cap rate environment, meaning prices go up, and rising interest rate environment, it's going to be here for a while too, which... Yes, and you have to understand the data, which Jenny and I do, and I think a lot of our listeners and viewers do as well, understand how does that make you feel as an investor? I'm a ride the trends guy, and so what can I do with the market? I can't change the fact that we have no inventory anywhere in Denver and Springs and Pueblo. Can't change the fact that everyone's moving here and business are moving here, but I'm like, all right, well, I'll buy into it and ride the wave. So I am good with understanding the market. But I'm not going to go out there and spend hundreds of hours looking for a 10 cap property. I'm fine out there going a 4 to 5 cap property.
Yeah. And just to kind of tag along with that, you mentioned something that made me think of this is, even if you need to put more money down to make you feel more comfortable, I still think that real estate is a better use of, you know, even if you're reducing your return on equity a little bit, I still think that real estate is a better way to park your capital for a long-term investment.
I agree. And I come back to, like, I do this regularly, and I did this a couple months ago. It's like, well, okay, where can I invest my money? Where can I put it? Like, the stock market, I mean... I have money in the stock markets, but I'm not thrilled to be putting a lot more in there right now. I mean, it's high, it's volatile. I'm not a crypto guy. Okay, great. My savings account last year is paying 1.5% and is now paying 0.2%. Can't leave it there. Like, I don't have a lot of great options. And I kind of go back to real estate. Well, okay, everything is not what it used to be. Great. Real estate's very attractive to me personally. And that's why, I mean, I still default, to your point, default to, well, I'll place money there.
Yep, exactly. So moving on, if someone says, no, an ARM is not for me, it's too risky, I need a 30-year fixed, then we'll often say, okay, well, if you want to stay in Colorado Springs, you need a 30-year fixed for your risk profile, but you also are saying that you need or want cash flow, we can suggest a different strategy for you. So either rent by the room, medium-term rental, but the caveat is both of these strategies are a lot more time intensive from a management perspective than just a traditional long-term rental. So that's, you know, we can kind of go from the financing piece, different options there, strategy piece, different options there. That's, you know, one trade-off to consider as well.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's the way to get more cash flow as well, is that's how you increase the rents. That's how you juice the rents. One thing I want to highlight is you said room by room and medium term rental, not short term rental or Airbnb, because that's now really tough in Springs. But I think medium term and room by room is where it's at.
Yeah.
And that's another trade-off. Like, those we've seen some really high cash flow numbers on, But as Jody said, you're running a business, either yourself or you're having a property manager that's a lot more proactive running it as well. But you can see some amazing cash flow returns.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, a buffet here. We're offering two different options. And then, you know, every once in a while, we'll get a client that says, no, I need a 30-year fixed rate. I need cash flow. And I don't want to operate a medium term or room by room rental. So then we suggest, hey, consider going down to Pueblo. There's still an option to cash flow on just long-term rentals down there. You know, sometimes we get pushed back on that. So it's just kind of one of those, you know, we can give you options, we can give you trade-offs to consider, but we unfortunately just can't change the market. We can't wave a magic wand and give you everything that you're looking for. But we can give you options to pick from. Yeah.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot here. I don't know if you know these numbers, but I got to ask the question now. So, you know, let's just say, you know, a long-term rental in the Springs, you know, versus a similarly priced like medium-term rental in the Springs or room by room rental. What's kind of like the monthly or annual cash flow difference you see between the two of those?
Yeah, it's, I would say between $5,000 to $10,000.
A month or a year?
Year.
So $500 to $1,000 a month ish.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to me, like, I don't know. I'm not willing to put in the extra work to operate a medium term rental for that much difference per month. Like, I would rather go out and close another deal to make up for that difference. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. For my day job. But some people, you know, like it. So it all depends on that person.
Oh yeah. And some people, I mean, if you're, I mean, a lot of our clients, like they're into it and they are crushing it with cash flow. Like, you know, but they're also like, it's like their side hustles, their business. Like they, you know, they enjoy it, you know, as a big part of it, which I don't think like you and I, we would not enjoy it. Just in terms of running that style of business. And that's part of like figuring out the right strategy for you. I'd rather like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm a little bit less cash flow just so I can be very hands off with it. So last question here for your numbers. You said in Pueblo, still long-term cash flow. Cash flow and long-term rentals. What's a ballpark like purchase price cash flow down there for a long-term rental at these new rates in the fives?
Yeah, so it is changing. So we're definitely seeing prices go up quite a bit. If you can get $100, $150 a month cash flow, then you're doing pretty well on a single family home, like around $200.
Okay. So $200 a month, a year?
$200,000 purchase price.
Oh, $200,000 purchase price. Okay. Sorry. And what was the expected cash flow?
Like $100 to $150.
Okay.
At best. Yeah. Okay.
Hey, that's still positive though. I mean, so there's another great option. All right. So obviously we kind of were talking into like, you know, some options on what to do with the market. We talked about room by room, medium-term rental, long-terms in Pueblo. But Jenny, I know we've done a bunch of stuff in new builds in Denver. You're doing a bunch of new builds in Springs. And you have a couple of like really good recent examples about how new builds are turning to be a really good strategy right now.
Yeah. So we have a couple people that are buying in a new build community that we have a pretty good relationship with down here. And the conversation has changed. So, you know, a few months ago, the people that were buying down there, we were showing some cash flow based on conservative underwriting. Right now, not so much just due to the interest rates. It was like that much of a switch. But what we're really looking at is a purchase price between $330,000 to $350,000, depending on where in the phases you purchase. And you know, we're thinking about $1,950 a month conservative rent. And the thing to consider is that with those numbers, we're looking at about negative $2,000 a year in cash flow, which usually immediately turns people off. However, in talking with the sales agent and the developer, and we've seen this happen, the developer is planning to build 12 sections of this development. And with each section release, they plan to increase prices $5,000 to $10,000, which I believe the market could bear, just based on other comparables nearby. Of course, none of this is guaranteed. I can't promise anything, all those disclaimers, but the buyers that bought section one, they bought it for $330,000 and their appraisal came back at $352,000, and we haven't even closed yet. So they've already made $22,000 in equity before even closing. So they're very happy about that. And then we have a couple buyers in phase two that are buying at about $340,000. And, I have a buyer that's about to purchase, in phase three at $350,000. So there's still nine more phases to go, and they're expecting a $5,000 to $10,000 price increase per phase. So, you know, you can definitely expect tens of thousands of dollars in equity. Or let me caveat that, reasonably expect.
you're in guarantee it, Jenny?
No, definitely not. So it's not a given, but it's a likely, assuming that, you know, all the market conditions kind of keep trending the way that they are. So it's like, you know, kind of that conversation that we've had with our investors is, hey, are you willing to give up $2,000 in the first year of cash flow to make tens of thousands of dollars in reasonably expected equity growth over the next year?
And I mean, I agree with everything you said there. And, you know, this, when you look at price appreciation like this, some people call, hey, that's speculation. That's not the way I look at it, but other people are like, hey, I'm like, you know what? You could look at it that way, but to me, it's like the risk reward ratio. I look at like, hey, what's the reward? It's all the potential upside. Now let's talk about the risk, the potential downside. And this is how my brain operates. So best case scenario, I think there's a very good chance that I can speculate at a much higher price over the next, you know, couple months, next couple years, and probably rent growth as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say that doesn't happen. What's kind of the worst case scenario? Well, next thing is stays flat. Yeah. What? Prices don't go up and cash flow is a negative $2,000 a year. Okay, I can withstand that. Worst case, what's the chances of the prices collapsing or rents collapsing? I think pretty darn low.
I do too. And I mean, if $2,000 a year, I mean, I know we say that's a water heater. Like, you need to account for that anyways, I would say. You need to have that in your back pocket. And I think that we underwrite pretty conservatively, that even if we are thinking that it's going to be negative $2,000 a year, it might not be, you know, it might be better than that. So,
And I mean, if that's going to be the borderline make or break it, you should not be investing. Like if you're that tight on cash though, or do a different strategy or from something else, but if it's that lean, don't invest, hang out for a bit. Something else as we're talking about this, it just popped in my mind is, you know, I got some friends around here where they help hedge funds buy properties. And that's like a big part of their business, is they are like the local boots on the ground. These are agents and, you know, investors that buy for hedge funds. And do you know how many properties they're buying up? Like 20, 30 a month. And they're buying basically at the same prices, same term, same thing we're getting. And they're just buying into us. They got their, you know, certain, you know, things they look for, but overall it's all about the same numbers and deals that the market's giving us, that we're buying for our clients, and they're just gobbling them up. And I always look at them because they have way more money than I do, but also that allows them to have their how many dozens or hundreds of analyst people and all that to figure out where to place money. And if hedge funds are doing that and they're gobbling them up, I'm like, great, that's another indicator that just buying into the market and buying in places like Denver, Springs, Pueblo, hedges against inflation, to me, that's just a like confirmation point.
Yep. I always just like to do what people that are much smarter and wealthier than I do, just copycat it at a smaller scale. And, you know, usually it works out.
I mean, I wish I could buy 20 homes a month right now, but Right. The Chris Lopez fund is not anywhere near that. All right. So getting back to, because I know there's another new build example, and this is a cool story with a client that I think bought a new build. Well, I'll let you tell it, but it's a cool story. So I'll put you the details.
Yeah. So absolutely. So, so these clients, they did buy a new build townhome and they have really liked it. And they also bought a townhome, I think it was about 1985, pretty good, solid property, like really solid bones, built well, no inspection issues, that sort of thing. So in fall of 2020, these clients bought that townhome for 15% down at $190,000 purchase price.
Okay.
And then that home had appreciated to $250,000 market value. So, you know, we talked about the ROE spreadsheet and everything that, you know, you and I have hammered a lot. So they wanted to 1031 trade that property into one of the new build townhomes that I was mentioning. So, they were the people that bought or that locked in at the 330 purchase price for the new build townhome. And so they were going to be able to, with that equity differential, trade into that brand new townhome for 25% down. So it was purely just kind of like they wanted to leverage more, but they also wanted less of a headache. What could be expected, I guess, in, you know, the next couple of years or whatever for an older home versus a newer home. So at the time they were renting out their original townhome at $1,300 a month. They were paying PMI because they only put 15% down and they're self-managing, but they're still making $150 a month in cash flow after budgeting for contingencies. So that's client number one. So then another set of Envision clients recently over the, you know, past couple of months, they're looking to make their first investment purchase. So they actually purchased this home from the first set of clients at market rate. So they purchased it at 250 and they used 25% down at 3.875%. The previous clients were at, I think, 3.625 or something like that. And they bought it at a time where the tenants were turning over. So these new set of investors, they turned around, rented the home for $1,600 a month with a property manager in place. So this is just a really interesting example. They bought the property at a higher interest rate, a higher purchase price, and they put property management in place. And these clients are still cash flowing about $100 a month after all contingencies. Purely based on the fact that they were able to increase the rent at turnover. So it was just a win-win all around for both sets of clients. The second set, they were able to get into a property, you know, in a really tough market and still get some cash flow out of it. And the first set, they were able to trade this townhome into a newer townhome.
And that's, I mean, that's such a great story and highlights one of the most important things investors and property managers can be doing right now, which is just keeping your rental at pace with market rent. Because, I mean, every year, you know, it's been going, rents has gone up and they should keep going up for a bit. If you look at, you know, the rent or the vacancy average and all that, like we expect rents to keep going up and pretty significantly for a bit. You want to maximize your return. People looking for value add stuff. People looking for all this creative stuff. Keep up with damn market rents. Like that's one of the simplest things. And one of the things like I get frustrated and talk to clients like I've had this property and then they're looking at new properties and they're complaining about the returns, but then the current properties are well below market rent. I'm like, this is part of the game, guys. Like, come on. So it's an amazing thing to look at, especially when this inflationary environment we're seeing where rents are going up due to inflation, due to low supply, high demand, the rental side, all the problems we have in the buyer's market, renters have the same market out here. So understand that rent should go up. But when you buy properties on your current properties, one of the best things you can do is just keep up with rents because that will help with cash flow. Jenny, this has been great. I know we could talk about this a lot, but we've done a lot of tidbits and facts and some fun tangents to this conversation. So we'll wrap up here. People always reach out to you, me with questions. And I think we should do, we'll keep doing more of these sessions in the future to kind of keep people up to date and keep it loose as to, hey, what we're seeing, opportunities and items like this. But great job, Jenny. Always appreciate your insight.
Sounds great, Chris. Looking forward to it.
All right. Anyone out there with questions, reach out to me or Jenny. If you're out there looking to buy investment properties, trying to figure out what to do in this market, email us or go to the website, click the consultation form, and that'll reach us as well. But have a great day. We'll